Oops.
That's why we're not professionals here.
That's right.
I'm Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie Jabroni.
Yes, and this is Hot Start. And we are joined by Mr. Craig Fuller, who I'm totally, like, intimidated to know is the president and CEO of AOPA.
That's the airline, airplane.
Yeah, the airlines or...
I keep thinking of ALPA. It's aircraft
owners and pilots.
Thank you.
There you go.
I'm Jeez. Sorry. Good God.
Nice to be with you guys this morning.
Thank you for coming.
Sure.
So what's going on with AOPA? I mean, a question I wonder is the economy has hit everybody hard, and I'm sure that's hit the pilot ranks hard.
You know, it has. We've had what the economists tell us is the worst economy in about 70 years for the last couple of years. So flight operations have been down. We're seeing some signs of improvement. Some of the air charter is up. Some of our fuel sales were up. Actually, the year started a little bit better, then it slowed down again, I think, as you see consumer confidence. But I've heard some of the avionics manufacturers are doing really well. There's some exciting new products coming out here at Oshkosh Air Venture. And so there's signs of encouragement, but it's still soft.
You know, that's an interesting point you brought up, avionics, that the technology is changing so fast. We're getting this ADS-B in-out thing, and my current question, not really for you, it just in general, is why does it have to cost so much, guys? We can build iPhones for, you know, $20 a piece, and they're, you know, the technology shouldn't be that expensive. Sorry.
You know, I don't disagree, but I also would point out that there's been some really great advances in the last 18 months or so with the iPad. Some of these apps that are available that we fly with, that give you all the charts and plates that you'd normally have on paper, are terrific and much more affordable than some of the other services. Some of the I think one of the reasons some of the avionics companies are doing well is because people have said they're probably not going to be in the market for a new plane, decide they want to upgrade with some of this technology in their current plane. And actually, you mentioned ADS-B. I think that may be a little slower in coming, given some of the budget realities in Washington. But even that has seen the price points coming down as people have gotten closer to the point of purchasing.
Well, I like the idea of it. I think it's a fantastic technology to have the airplanes tell each other where they are.
Exactly.
It's just the implementation seems to be so expensive.
That's what advantage. The real advantage, of course, is that the aircraft and those of us who fly them know better where that aircraft is than the flight controller. And so modernizing our air traffic control system really means getting better information on those screens that the air traffic controllers are using. And the very best information is the GPS-derived information, which is why, by the way, we need to protect GPS from a company that might have another idea out there.
Yeah, we've been reading a lot about that lately, and they're, you know, the company that's putting this out is saying, no, everything's fine. And I've been reading on AOPA's e-newsletter as well as EAA's that this is definitely a cause for concern, that it has been proven without a doubt that their system is going to completely disasterize GPS.
Yeah, it's remarkable. You know, we're not the technical experts, but when the Department of Transportation has senior officials and the Department of Defense has senior officials testifying under oath before Congress that this would this light squared technology would seriously degrade our whole GPS system and what are probably more than 500 million devices in the U.S. today that have a GPS capability, you know, you should pay attention. I kind of liken it to a prescription drug manufacturer. This is a company, LightSquared, that has good intentions. They want to make Datacom and stuff more available around the country. Good intentions, came out with a product. What I don't understand is why the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, did not make absolutely certain before they began granting approvals and waivers that the new technology was not going to interfere with GPS technology. And I think we've said it's time for the FCC to essentially recall some of those waivers and take a much closer look at how this might be accomplished in a way that wouldn't destroy our dependence on GPS.
Now, with all this technology that's emerged in the last 10 years, GPS guidance, autopilots, have you seen or would you say that some of us are losing our basic stick and rudder skills, our basic navigation skills in favor of these new devices?
Well, I sincerely hope that's not the case. I think that we see pilots being trained, some of whom want to start immediately with a glass panel because it gives them such much greater situational awareness. But ultimately, that pilot still has to fly, be able to fly the airplane, and he or she has to be able to land it safely. And the flying skills necessary to conduct a safe landing are probably the ones that are where the most precision is needed. So we don't want to see any degradation. I do believe that the technology has greatly improved situational awareness and reduces some of the workload inside the cockpit, but you have to be trained on the equipment. And I worry that if people jump into these sophisticated cockpits without all the training, then it becomes a disadvantage because they're too busy trying to program their equipment. Training is very critical.
And manage the information overload.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the other things that has become a hot topic with the glass cockpits is situational awareness. As you have said, there was recently a case of a mid-air collision between two aircraft, and it was thought that the pilots on board the one airplane, it was equipped with a glass cockpit, they did not have their eyes outside. They were looking at all the toys. And the NTSB said that this was a contributing factor.
Yeah, it can certainly become a distraction, and you must have your wits about you to look out the window. One of the things that we work on in training for some of the aircraft I fly is in a simulator. They put you in a situation where you're going to get very close to a mid-air collision unless you avert it. Now, my instinct is to get off autopilot, fly the airplane. But they tell me it's amazing how many people reach for the heading, try to adjust the heading bug, use the autopilot, which is just not going to be fast enough. And some of the instructors have said to me, if you have your hand on the controls and you're looking out the window and you're flying the airplane, you'll avoid the mid-air collision. If you're fiddling with the instruments to try to climb the plane or turn the plane using the autopilot, your chances are much less. And so I think I commend, this happens to be Flight Safety International, where I do a lot of my training, I commend them for making sure that's part of the curriculum, because getting off the off of the autopilot and actually flying the airplane is very important.
Years back, and this, you're in Oshkosh, the mecca of these type of flyers, was the older gentleman that said, I just want an airplane, I don't want no radio, I don't want I just want to go fly. And I never understood that, but as I get older, it's like, that's not a bad idea either. Just get out in uncontrolled airspace and putt
and
around.
Fly. I still hear that. I've been spending a little bit of time in a Husky, and I thoroughly enjoy it. And I find myself flying over areas that I've flown hundreds of times before in more sophisticated airplanes. And it's kind of like discovering it anew because you see a lot more. And we, of course, fly in out of Frederick, Maryland. We have the special flight rule area around Washington, D.C. to our south. We have Camp David to our north, which expands from time to time. So even if you just want to get in a Husky and go fly, you've got to make sure you're paying attention to these restricted areas and you're navigating. But it's all doable. And so I think there's room for both.
So real quick before we go to break, AOPA is, what can you do for us pilots? I mean, what do you offer?
Well, we were formed in 1939. We were formed to make sure regulation and the cost of flying didn't become prohibitive for a very new general aviation community, and to make sure we were communicating. Those are still very much the areas we work in now. We communicate with pilots. We're strong advocates at the federal and the state level. Right now, we're very concerned in this budget deal. The user fee popped back on the table again. Our members have been fantastic. Thousands and thousands of them have called or written their congressman to say, don't put user fees on general aviation in this package. And we appreciate that. So we're fighting those same battles. We know it's expensive, but we want to try to prevent regulations or taxes that would certainly add to our costs and add to our burden. And at the end of the day, do what our founders in 1939 sought, which was to protect the freedom to fly.
Very good.
It's a great thing.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us.
Nice to be with you. I'm looking forward to the week ahead here.
And you guys have a booth.
We have
a
booth.
Building.
Come see us in the booth. We've got AOPA Live. Our video webcast is going to kick off on Thursday morning with Harrison Ford, our first guest. And so we're here all week.
I think we've been upstaged.
I think we have.
not you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody comes here.
I wouldn't say that. All right.
Just proves my point. We're just Radio Jabronis.
Yep. This is Radio Jabroni Digital Dave.
And I'm Radio Jabroni Fast Eddie.
And this is Hot Start on EAA Radio.